Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to Community Connection on Star 94.5. I'm Monica May. My guest this morning is Geraldine Thompson. I was just reminding her, do you remember this time 10 years ago, you and I boarded a smaller bus and we went street by street and we just had a discussion on the history of our wonderful city here. So good morning.
Good morning.
Mrs. Thompson, it's so good to see you. Do I call you Senator Thompson, Representative Thompson? We just don't want to give up those titles.
Well, it's customary to use the highest level of...
Senator Thompson. Mm-hmm. You will forever be that in our eyes, Senator Thompson. And I asked her, I said, they can't create a role for you up there in Tallahassee because you, as you say, are a problem solver. That's what you do.
I am. And I'm hoping to have some involvement. I've always been a community activist and a person who gets involved, and that's not going to change. So I'm still going to be very much involved.
Okay. All right. One thing I do know that you're very well involved in is the Wells Built Museum. You gave birth to that baby several years ago. I was there for the opening for that, my first go around being here in Orlando. It's grown. And then when you went to Tallahassee, it stayed. And now it's got some more energy coming from you. So let's talk about where it's going now.
Well, we're working with Orange County to get some funding to get touch screens and to bring the museum into the age of technology so that through digital media, people will be able to learn a whole lot more about our community. For example, people do not know that the Wells Built was a stop on the Chitlin Circuit. Mm-hmm. And many entertainers who are famous today perform next door at the South Street Casino and roomed at the Wells Built. And we want people to know who those entertainers were and to be able to see them and to hear them. Jimmy Lunsford, Erskine Hawkins, Cab Calloway, all of these are individuals who were there. And we have business ledgers from Dr. Wells that were in his home, and we're renovating the home now. But those ledgers document over a 13-year period of time who those folks were. And so through digital media, we will be able to present these entertainers to this community.
There were so many other artifacts in the museum that tell the story of Orlando. Can you take me from coming in the door almost in your mind, paint the picture for us of what's so beautiful about the Wells Built?
Well, when you come into the Wells Built, there is a registration desk because it was a Black owned and operated hotel, a property of Dr. William Monroe Wells. And because of Jim Crow laws and segregation, there were no other places, unless someone took you into a private home, there were no other places for people to stay. So many of the entertainers that I just mentioned and other dignitaries stayed at the Wells Built. And the Wells Built received visitors from throughout the country because it was highlighted in a publication called the Negro Motorist Green Book. And the Negro Motorist Green Book was compiled by a postman who lived in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And working with other Black postmen throughout the country, they would identify for him hotels and restaurants and beauty parlors and places that would welcome Black visitors. So the Wells Built was in the Negro Motorist Green Book, which was published from 1936 until 1966 after the Civil Rights Act was passed. And one of the people who found the Wells Built in the Negro Motorist Green Book was Thurgood Marshall. He came to Central Florida to defend four Black men in Groveland mm-hmm. who were accused of rape. And there was no hotel in Lake County that would rent him a room. And people who might have taken him into their homes had been threatened by the Klan. So he used the Negro Motorist Green Book and he found this hotel on South Street in Paramore and he checked in at the Wells Built.
And he made his trek to Groveland during that entire trial.
40 miles back and forth. And he associated with Paul Perkins Sr. Mm-hmm. And together they were the legal team that defended the Groveland Four.
There is so much history. So when we talk about the Groveland Four, Let's talk a little bit about that then.
Well, you know that it's the subject of a Pulitzer Prize winning book called Devil in the Grove, mm-hmm. and it won the prize in 2013, and it is a book that was written by Gilbert King. Gilbert has visited the Wells Belt, has written about the Wells mm-hmm. Belt, and throughout his book, Devil in the Grove, he makes reference to the hotel where Thurgood Marshall would stay and would meet with Paul Perkins. And many times he indicated that Thurgood Marshall would come, check in, and then go out the back door and go to someone's home so that people didn't know exactly where he was staying because of threats against him that had been made in the community. And one of the other things that's exciting about the Wells Belt, it was a stop on the Chitlin Circuit, and many of the entertainers were under contract to the Theater Operators Booking Association, known as TOBA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a white-owned association, but they would contract with African-American entertainers and book them into these different venues. And it was a grueling schedule. They had to perform at several different venues in a city before moving to another city. And many of the entertainers who worked with TOBA said that it really stood for Tough on Black
Acts.
Yes.
We'll leave it like that.
Yeah, we'll leave it like that.
TOBA, I'm familiar with because my father was an entertainer out of New York.
Right.
Not necessarily that early, but TOBA existed in many other instances, too, throughout that entertainment industry. Who are some other famous people that stayed at the Wells Belt?
Jackie Robinson stayed at the Wells Belt because when he came here with his teammates in 1947, the teammates stayed at the Angebelt, owned by a man named Mr. Ange. But the only way an African-American went to the Angebelt is as a maid,
a servant.
So while the team members were at the Angebelt, Jackie Robinson was at the Wells Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Wells Belt is listed on the National Register of Historic Places because of the significance of the people who stayed there. If you think about, for example, the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, where Dr. King stayed, not because it was the most luxurious place, but it was the only place.
Mm-hmm.
And so Orlando, Orange County, has a place in history because of the historically significant people who stayed at the Wells Belt.
So once Dr. Wells died, and I want to talk about all that he provided for our community here, you moved the house. Tell me about that, because I know that there was some moving, but that hotel, that structure was just there.
Yes, the hotel is in its original site, on the original site, but next to it is the residence of Dr. Wells. And the residence was located where the Amway Center now sits.
Yes.
And it was slated for demolition. And rather than see it demolished, PAST, which is the nonprofit organization that runs the Wells Belt, we raised funds and we literally moved it from where it was to where it is today. We hired a contractor who came with these huge hydraulic lifts, put it under the house and lifted it into the air,
mm-hmm.
put it on a flatbed trailer and rolled it down the street,
mm-hmm.
and left it up on the ties until we could raise money to put a foundation under the house and lower the house onto the foundation. And we're in the process now of restoring that home and opening the home as well to the public.
So have you been inside that home?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's in good repair.
It's in great repair.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Wells invested in this home. And before we moved it, we had engineers come in and cut open portions of the wall to see if it would sustain a move.
Mm-hmm.
The wood that was inside looks brand new.
Wow.
And so we lost some of the windows when we moved it. The windows broke, but we're getting ready to replace those.
Mm-hmm.
But the home is in great repair. And we're just excited about being able to bring people into the home where Dr. Wells entertained one of his favorite people, and that was Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the board of trustees for Bethune-Cookman College at the time. And she would often visit him in his home. He and his wife would entertain all kinds of people, including Bessie Coleman, the first Black aviator in America. They had a reception for her in their home. And, you know, she lived in Orlando for a period of time, left Orlando to go to Jacksonville to participate in some stunts on May Day. And that's where she unfortunately fell out of her plane. But there are so many historically significant people who were guests in the Wells home, who were guests in the Wells-built hotel. There were all kinds of activities that were centered around Division and South. On the weekend, people would go strolling. And strolling meant that they would really dress up and they would just stroll down Church Street. They'd stroll up.
Wouldn't you love to see that?
Oh, my Ooh. Goodness. See, this is the kind of thing that we're going to do with this interactive yes. digital media at the Wells Build, is to see people in period clothing strolling along the streets downtown. And people always strolled by the South Street Casino, which was also one of the properties of Dr. Wells, because even if you couldn't afford to go inside the South Street Casino, you'd see the big buses with the names of the band on it, and you see the entertainers just dressed flamboyantly. And so
it was zoot suits.
So it was an exciting time. That was the entertainment for a lot of people, was strolling on the weekend.
Who are some of the names who were invited to dine with Dr. Wells and his wife in their home? Do you know any of those names?
Well, if there was a person of particular significance, they would not have that person eat at the Wells Build. There was a little eatery there, but they would invite them to their home. So certainly Thurgood Marshall would have been someone okay. who would have dined in the home. And as I mentioned, Dr. Bethune, and people who had no other choices because of Jim Crow laws. There was a baseball team here called the Orlando All-Stars that was owned by Mr. Felix Cosby. And so athletes came as well as entertainers. And many times those are people who were invited to come and dine with, her name was Clifford Irene Wells and Dr. William Monroe Wells.
Let's talk about Dr. Wells and all that he contributed to our community and the play that you did for our community, what, 2 years ago now?
Yes, 2 years
yes.
ago.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Wells was a member of the Board of Trustees, so he was a physician, yes, but also very involved with the community. Board of Trustees of Bethune. He also served on the board of Edward Waters College. He was a member of Mount Olive AME Church, so he was a lay member of the leadership of the AME Church.
And okay.
So he was very involved in the religious community as well. And he was a community activist, and he provided for certainly the physical needs of people in the community, but also gave them cultural and social outlets and, you know, religious direction. So people really revered him. For a portion of time during World War II, he was the only black physician in Orlando from 1941 to 1945, and he has citations from several presidents for the work that he did. It's hard to imagine that he's someone who is responsible for delivering about 6,000 babies in Orlando.
Many of them still alive
Many
today.
Many of them still alive.
Yes.
And you find birth certificates with Dr. Wells' signature on it. So he did a great deal to increase the population of Orange County. And not every black community had access to health care. So they relied on herbal medicine. They relied on home remedies. If someone knew a root that you could boil, that's what they relied on. And then even if a doctor was in the community, they many times could not afford it. But Dr. Wells took anybody who came. And before the miracle drugs like penicillin and other things came into being, he treated people with scarlet fever, with pneumonia, all kinds of illnesses. And many times the only compensation he got from that was seeing them get
live.
Well. Seeing them live. Seeing them live.
One of the things that my mom always told my daughter, and I love this, when we share stories, she would always end with, and don't forget, you come from good stock. And I say this because we've lost that initiation of stories. We've lost our elders, Senator Thompson, who will sit and we can sit at their knee and just hear history. We have a family of doctors in Harlem that were related to us, the Amoses, and they saw whoever was in need. And a lot of times the families lived in the places that they practiced.
Yes. For a time, Dr. Wells did see patients in his home. A separate entrance is there. And then later he moved his medical practice to Church Street. But for a time, just as you described, he did see patients right there in his home.
What's the correlation with Dr. Wells and Guardian Care, the assisted nursing facility now?
Well, the connection is that there was no hospital really where African Americans would be treated. And then the Seventh-day Adventist Church established the Dr. P. Phillips Hospital for Coloreds, is what it was called. And the Guardian Care Convalescent Center is now where the hospital used to operate. So that was a hospital, and Dr. Wells worked there. The Seventh-day Adventist Church hired Dr. J. Mark Cox and Dr. A. L. Bookhart. They were the two people who managed the Dr. Phillips Hospital for Coloreds. Dr. Cox was the first Black surgeon in Orlando, and Dr. Bookhart assisted him. And there's a little store now across from Guardian Care. And that little area was their medical practice. Mm-hmm. And the hospital was right across the street. And people come by Guardian Care all the time and don't realize that it was a hospital for coloreds. And that is one of the facilities where Dr. Wells practiced as well.
Well, you know, every year the Guardian Care will do a celebration for its patients and invite people who were born there, and they can come up and tell their stories. I've hosted that a couple of times, and I just wonder at that store, Mount Olive, if people realize the soil that they're walking on.
I don't think so. And that's why I've really worked to document a lot of this and to write it down. Because we share the history, we have an oral tradition, and many times when the elders leave, the history leaves.
The history's gone.
The history's gone. Some of the richest places throughout America are Black cemeteries where Black folks are buried. That's where the treasure has gone. And so we've got to write it down, because you might have heard the saying, if it's not documented, it didn't happen.
True.
And that's the way that it is in the minds of a lot of people.
Let's talk about your legacy play. That thing was amazing.
Well, it focused on voting rights and how voting rights came to be in Central Florida. And I wrote it to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, which was 1965. So the play was introduced in 2015 to celebrate. And it focused on going all the way back to July Perry in Ocoee, who in 1920 went to the polls in Ocoee to try to vote and was told that he hadn't paid his poll tax and that he'd have to take a literacy test. He'd have to get somebody to vouch for him. And here's a man who brought laborers to gather the citrus crops. So he was a well-to-do man. And he said, I paid every tax I'm supposed to pay. And there was a debate. So he left and went back to the colored quarters in Ocoee and was followed by a posse, by a mob. And that posse set fire to the buildings in the colored quarters, the homes. And if people stayed in the homes, they were cremated in the homes. And if they ran out, they were shot. And July Perry, when they came to his home, he got a gun to protect himself and his family. And he was taken from the home and taken to the jail in Orange County. That's where the county seat is. And a mob came there, took him out of the jail and lynched him and hung him from a tree. And his body was left there as a symbol that this is what happens if you attempt to vote in Orange County. And so it was a long time before people decided that they were going to rise up and really make this community live up to the Constitution. So in 1922, Joe Stevens tried to organize a chapter of the Orange County branch of the NAACP to address lynching and to address voting rights. People were afraid to join the NAACP because they could lose their job. They could lose their life. So it was a dangerous thing. The folks who did join, their records of membership were in the trunk of someone's car rather than in a place where people could go in and rifle through, and they'd take the membership rolls with them. So that was very difficult to find out who the members were. So the play focuses on July Perry. The play focuses on people who wanted higher education, like Virgil Hawkins, who applied to go to law school at the University of Florida, was never admitted. Met all of the qualifications. And as a result of his insistence that he go to the University of Florida Law School, where his tax dollars went to support that institution. But as a result of that, the leadership in Florida established a law school at Florida A&M University mm-hmm. in 1949, mm-hmm. sent his application to Florida A&M. And he said, well, this is a new fledgling law school. I want to go to the one that's well established, that has prepared most of the lawyers and most of the judges in Florida. But he was never accepted. And he agreed to withdraw his application if they would admit a young man from Orlando, George Stark. And he was admitted to the law school there.
Mm-hmm. So many stories like that were told.
Yes.
During the play.
Yes.
And I would love to see that reenacted again. I would love to also just be a part of helping you purge what's on your brain, what's on your heart, what's on your mind into another play of historical value for us. Because again, our elders with the stories are leaving us. And you, I don't know how you get a hold of these stories, my dear.
Well, I do a lot of research.
Yes,
and,
yes.
I participated in an oral history project, which was the beginning of all of this. And this was in the 80s. Because at Valencia, one of the things that I did in February was to organize events and activities for Black History Month. And certainly I could find information about Dr. Martin Luther King,
sure.
and Abernathy and Rosa Parks and Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver. No information about the local people. And in every community, there were people supporting what Dr. King did.
Sure.
And so through this oral history project, there were interviews with I. Sylvester Hankins Jr., interviews with Nap Ford, interviews with Arthur Pappy Kennedy, interviews with people like Thelma Vivian Jackson Dudley.
Uh-huh.
And so years later, and we recorded all of these conversations on cassette tape. That was the technology mm-hmm, at mm-hmm, the time.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, I sat down and transcribed all of those interviews, wrote a book, Black America, Orlando, Florida.
Yes.
And then included a lot of this information in the play. But the information is from the source of the people who lived here. And that's how I knew about the strolling. Nap Ford describes the stroll just beautifully.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, you know, he talked about going into the South Street Casino during the day.
Mm-hmm.
They had a basketball court in the South. Yeah, so that young people had a pastime. Dr. Wells had a basketball court. But when the sun went down, the youngsters had to leave.
Okay.
So that the adults could come in.
Uh-huh.
And Panama Francis
yes.
performed.
Wow.
Yeah, he performed mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. South Street Casino. And he said that there were no advertising that was available to promote acts. So what they would do, they'd have a band or they'd have a performer and they'd invite people in and they'd play for, let's say, half an hour. And then if people, you know, were nodding and through mm-hmm. their body language, you could see that they were really enjoying it. Then they invited them all to leave. And then they had to pay to come back in.
I see.
So it really was the oral history project that kind of got me started. And then you don't find a whole lot of information in other books where people have written histories of Orlando. And so it's our responsibility to tell our story. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so that's what I've been working on for now, I think, about 30 years.
All right. So before we wrap up, because time just, I tell you, when we get together, it just goes by so quickly. What can we do to A, perhaps help for part two of that lovely play? Get the Wells Built expanded technologically as you would have it.
Well, I have submitted a proposal to Orange County through tourism development tax dollars. I'm hoping to get funding to make it more high tech and more user friendly, mm-hmm. digital media, touch screens, all of that kind of thing. And I am going to need ambassadors so that we can make people aware that the Wells Built is there, its historical significance. And when people have family reunions and they have people who are coming into town, bring them to the Wells Built.
Yes.
Ultimately, once I have a lot of this stuff done, I'd like to have Tom Joyner consider making it a part of the offerings for the family reunion in September.
And we can talk about it. Do you think it will be ready this September?
I don't believe it'll be ready this September.
But perhaps for 18.
Yeah, for 18.
Okay, well,
for 18.
Then that's what we have to start working on right now. You mentioned Valencia. As I sit on that Black Advisory Council and in our meetings, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. And so we're doing all things part of history. So there may be a piece in there that you might want to share in terms of your experience with the wonders of Valencia College. And you know, it's interesting. I never knew just how much this community wasn't pro-Valencia 50 years ago.
Well, there was another college, Orlando Junior College, and it was segregated. And when the discussion started about Valencia, the proposal was to make it open to all people, to make it an integrated facility. And so there was not a whole lot of support for that. That was in 1967. So think about it now. Mm-hmm. We're talking about just 3 years after the Civil Rights Act was passed. And then in the African American community, people had been denied access and opportunity for so long that it took some convincing to make them aware that, yeah, this belongs to you. And that was one of my responsibilities. I was at Valencia for 24 years, started the college reach out program to bring young people in. Dr. Thelma Vivian Jackson Dudley that I mentioned asked me to take the Black Advisory Committee that she started. And so it was working with the community so that they understood that this was a higher educational institution that their tax dollars supported.
And it was open for everyone.
And it was open for everybody. And so we saw some progress. We saw some successes in that area. And I'm very proud of my work when I look back at my Valencia years. Very proud of the work that I did there.
Well, I am asking you on radio if you would consider just coming to one of our meetings just to share with us where you were, what your vision, what your sight was for the Black Advisory Council at that time, so that our committee can pull our bootstraps back on and, you know, pop our suspenders and get back to work.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Oh, we thank you. We thank you. We thank you. And thank you for helping me start the Star Cares Black History Tours. Thank you for showing us the richness in this city. Thank you for letting us go on your political journey with you. Thank you for being so open and so willing to share history and just make it so viable for us and vibrant as well. Thank you for being the lady who you are. Thank you for being healthy again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, God is good.
All the time. And thank you, thank you, thank you, Senator Geraldine Thompson, just for being who you are. May God richly continue to bless you.
Thank you. And I'm hoping to do this play for Juneteenth. I want it.
Okay. I want it. And we want to see how we can help. Yes. Yes. And we thank you for listening to another edition of Community Connection on Star 94.5.